All right, recording in progress. We are on Facebook. We are live on Zoom. And just like every week, back here with my excellent friend Daniel for Talk Openly. Hi, Daniel.
Hello, Jack. It's so nice to be with you yet again.
So nice to be with you too. I see you're in a different space tonight. Can you tell us about your space?
Yeah, I am in a totally different space. I just showed up here just a little bit ago. I'm in an Airbnb in Sacramento. My partner is a bookkeeper, and the first month of the year is incredibly difficult, right? It's just like it's wild working from sun up to sundown, like lots of incredible attentive energy. And there's kids at the house and dogs and all kinds of distractions and stuff. And she had some family coming to help out with that and decided, I think I'll just rent an Airbnb so we can completely isolate and just focus. And she let me tag along, which was really nice of her. And it's really
Great.
cool. I wish I could show you the whole house, actually. It's kind of neat, the idea behind it. So it's not just an Airbnb, it's like an Airbnb with a whole bunch of local artists throughout. So it's like a little bit of a local art museum with pieces for sale like throughout the whole house, and
Wow.
an Airbnb. So it's kind of cool. There's some neat stuff here. I like the vibe. I totally
That's
dig.
awesome.
And it's got a good, strong, healthy internet connection, decent lighting. I think I can I think I could like this place.
What more could you ask for? Yeah, that's
Yeah,
right.
no, it's good. I'm super stoked to be here with you from this environment. How are things? Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say we're going to be talking about people pleasing tonight as our subject later on. And I imagine, anytime family is in the picture, there's like an element of trying to figure out like how to keep people, not at each other's throats. And I'm, just curious if taking up an Airbnb is part of that, but maybe in a good way, not
Oh
necessarily
no,
in a
I don't
neurotic way.
think so. I don't think so. I think it's purely practical, as in like a quiet place to work from that has a good internet connection and no distractions.
Gotcha.
I don't think anybody would really be at anybody's throat. I think it'd be more like just extra stressful on her, and she's what I aspire to be, which is a wise woman. I mean, I don't want to be a wise woman, but I want to be a maybe,
Maybe
but I want to be a
in the next life, I mean, certainly in a next life, you're going to be a wise woman at some point.
I hope so. If I, when I am a woman, I hope I'm a wise woman, whether it's in this life or a future life. Regardless, the wise part of that, I would like to emulate that. So she's a good source of inspiration. But she's just like, talk about skillful means, right? At least at work, there's a very like clear, I need to get some stuff done, and I know what I need, what kind of environment I need to support that. And I could take like a cue from that. Right, like in the sense that I'm actually a lot like when it comes to work stuff. I'm just like whatever. I can work while I'm backpacking. I can work, I can work from a park. I can whatever. And it's true. I mean, like technically, I can work from those
Technically.
places. It's not the same thing as like locking in and settling down and focusing.
Right. And also, there is something to having boundaries around your work and life, right? Like, so backpacking, you kind of want to just be backpacking rather than backpacking and working. For me, although I also get it, like where it's like, well, if I could be doing that, like while working, why not? So
So
I get both ways.
that's a bit more. I don't know if it's because of. So I did a little quiz about which Buddha families are most prevalent with me, and the Buddha family and the Vajra family are like equal in terms of like being sort of blown out of proportion. Like they're not very well balanced with the rest of them. But that makes sense. But I think that one aspect is this sort of like there is this sort of spaciousness, but it's like boundaryless. It's like it's all very fluid. Like, oh.
Yes.
you know, like life and work and everything just sort of like blends together into this sort of like jelly, you know, just like it's just all together. And that has its perks, which is, you know, part of the reason why I am that way. But it definitely has its disadvantages as well, because I tend to lean towards what's easier rather than what needs to be done. You know, it's like what I actually like, it's more like what I
Totally.
to do.
So the boundaries are blurred, which can have its, its benefits but yeah, being permeable sometimes is not the best approach. It can have its faults.
Thankfully, yeah. So in my relationship with my partner, we have, it's a little bit more like balance in that sense. So she can sort of like correct me when I'm boundary less and a little bit too free floating, you know? And then vice versa when I'm like, hey, you're too locked down. Like, open up. Break those rules, erase those lines.
No, I mean, I think it's all about balance, right? And that's what makes such a good relationship is when we can complement one another. Like I was just talking to a friend today who she's like a super chatty person, like extremely social, always wants to be out doing things. And her partner is like the exact opposite.
Yeah, wow. Right.
And then they really kind of balance each other out, and
Yeah.
it's quite lovely, the way that they kind of draw out different parts of each other.
Yeah.
A balanced Buddha family is what we're looking for.
That's right. That's right. I bring it up because Lama's talk recently was about that. And I didn't get to listen to the talk live or be there for it. But thankfully, it's posted on the YouTube. So Lion's Roar Dharma Center has its own YouTube channel, which is absolutely fantastic, right? Like, it is such a repository of knowledge and wisdom and experience there. It's not just Lama's talks, right? Like, it's student talks as well, and it goes back a long ways. I find it really helpful, so I subscribe to it. So whenever like a new video gets posted, I get a little ding, and I've been listening to the talk about the five Buddha families. I'm really loving it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got to do that quiz. I
Yeah,
want to check it out.
quiz kind of fun. Do you have
Matt, our friend Matthew sent it to
it?
me. I gotta do it. Yeah, I lost. I'm a little bit of an impatient person, so I'm thinking I might like who's the Buddha that what's the Buddha family where that's like anger, like quick to anger is kind of one of
Oh, is that the, I think that's, isn't that the Vajra family? I thought.
maybe. Yeah,
I
well,
think.
it's funny because I attempted to take the quiz. But it was taking a long time, and I was like, okay, I kind of got to do other things. Like, I'll just save it here, right? And then I go back and like fill the rest of it out, and then press enter, and it's erased all of my data. And then I was just like, no, like, I'm not. I can't do this. I gotta go back. Patience is
It's
good.
kind of fun. I mean, it's just it was, I thought it was fun to take a quiz. And it was interesting because the results were actually identical to the last time I took it, the same one back in
Really?
like May, I think it was. And I just happened to be talking to Matthew about it, and he had sent me his like latest score, and he was like all like a little bit more balanced out from last time, and I was like right where I used to, I've always been like way off balance.
Well, yeah, and I think like that is totally fair. Like, I think sometimes it's about honing what we're already good at, right?
Yeah, certainly. At least being aware of it and having some acceptance that I don't think that anything has to be corrected. It's not a self-improvement project, but just sort of, I love the idea of how like recognizing our own strengths and weaknesses, and knowing that other people have different strengths and weaknesses, and how that makes it so that we don't have these weird expectations that everyone is like us. And that's what actually allows for beautiful relationships, balanced relationships, like the one that you were talking about with your friends, is when you recognize, like, no, it's totally fine. You're nothing like me, and that's wonderful. That's good.
For sure. Yeah, no, and that's like when you put it that way, that really takes away any kind of like urge towards jealousy around like other people and our friends where it's like, oh man, they have that, like that's That's so cool. I want to be boundaryless and just like open and free. You know, like that's kind of something that I really appreciate in my friends, and just kind of wish a little achingly that I had a little bit more of that, you know. But on the other hand, like I have a lot of other really good skills.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine a body that only had like the loose like fat and muscle but no bone? Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, you need some structure,
You
and
gotta
that
have structure. You got to.
I'm good with the bones, right? I've got
Yeah.
that. Excuse me, you got me coughing here.
It's all right, Skeletor.
Well, yeah, I'm doing good. I'm looking forward to talking about tonight, because I had a little bit of an experience of my own people pleasing over the weekend, and how it kind of like really spurs all these different neuroses within myself. And so it was interesting. I have plenty to talk about. But yeah, I social events can be stressful for me. Making plans are stressful for me. I have like a very full schedule. I ended up overbooking. And so I'll tell you more about that, later on. But yeah, this is not an uncommon situation for me. I tend to overbook and then have to, pull back on things. And that's where some of the my anxieties and the people pleasing happens. And so yeah, there's certainly plenty for me to talk about. But what was funny is that I ended up doing all the things that I had planned to do anyways. It just took some negotiation. Yeah, ended up having a great weekend. It snowed here.
Nice.
And was pretty snowy at my friend's house that I went and visited. But yeah, just some really good, I think, people time this weekend. When usually I'm like, especially in the winter, I just kind of want to be in my cave and be in bed and just warm and relaxed and asleep, because man, in the winter, I need a lot of sleep, it feels like, especially up here with the it's just darker. So anyways, I'm kind of just coping with winter, and yeah, I'm gonna be visiting Sacramento this week.
You're coming back.
I'm
Nice.
coming to Sacramento this weekend for a few days. So hoping to see some Dharma folks. But yeah, so
That's
it's
awesome.
interestingly enough, usually when winter is my kind of period to turn inward, I'm doing a lot that's outward. So
As if there's much of a difference, Jack.
yeah. Ultimately, that's true.
Awesome. How exciting. Well, I hope I get to see you when you're here. That'd be great.
Yeah, most definitely. We'll make it happen.
Cool. Well, what about training? How's your training going?
I have to say I haven't been quite as diligent. I don't know if I would say not diligent. I'll say that I get to my training. And because I'm kind of tired of like putting certain pressures on myself. I mean, we come back to this topic all
Yeah,
the
all the
time,
time. Yeah.
of like we have these expectations around like what does a successful meditation training kind of schedule look like. And of course, as we were talking about, since I'm the very kind of structured skeleton person, a lot of what I see as successful is like, did I do it on time? Did I, did I do it every day? And that's kind of like the bones of it. But I am finding that if I allow myself a little bit more openness and less rigidity, that actually my meditation is more fruitful. And so even though I'm feeling a little bit kind of like uneasy about how I'm a little bit less structured about my training, I think that's actually good for me because I am such a skeleton-minded person, that I need to add in some of the kind of the jelly floppy, bit.
Makes sense.
It's great. I've been trying this style of meditation that actually our friend Ellen taught me this style of meditation recently, where you kind of go in and out of like a kind of different focus. So there's like, focusing on the body, the breath, and then just kind of open awareness itself. And it's kind of moving in between those, which feels very formless to me. And so what my kind of like structured mind has done is that I have a timer set on my phone that every 3 minutes I like switch. So I might change that up to so that it's like a little bit more natural. But I think right now it's interesting just to train that way and like weaving in and between those different focuses. So
How
that's
cool
really
too, you're
interesting.
using that thing, that structure, the bones, if you will, which is your proclivity, you know, like you're already sort of, that's your strength, that's your family, that's your whatever, your personality type, and you're using that in order to gain more flexibility. How cool is that?
Yeah, thanks. You can kind of think of it as like I think of structure as like the rhythm section of music, right? Where it's like that kind of like keeps you on point, right? It keeps you going. And then this more kind of like engaged and like joy, even joy seeking, I think is like relevant here. Like that's kind of like the melody section of music where there's a little bit more spontaneity and play, and they have to go together.
What is melody without the rhythm?
Right. Which, there is music that's melody without rhythm, or
I was
maybe less obviously, but
just gonna say, whatever it is, that's the way I live my life. I don't have any rhythm. I try to play music, no rhythm. I try to do meditation practice, no rhythm. What?
totally. That's
I
okay.
gotta use that. I'm gonna try to use the flabby, flexible stuff to build some structure.
Well, dance too is another good comparison. There's so much like kind of especially like modern dance, where it's a little bit like flowy and floppy and stuff. But at the same time, there's like, oh, those people are very structured. So yeah, there's definitely, they work together.
I wish I could dance.
Oh yeah. Me too. I want to get back to it. We'll see. How's your training?
It's good. It's good. Nice and consistent. I had a really beautiful experience on Monday. I do a green Tara practice on Monday mornings at the temple, and it was really quite beautiful. I went in and had this like it was just this amazing. I had no expectation. I was just doing my usual thing, right? And showed up, and then I noticed there was this gorgeous sort of bittersweet heart opening that happened during my practice and during subsequent sitting. That was really it was super palpable. You know, like I've had little experiences like this before. It was very, you know, it was familiar, but it was so like there, you know, it was like this, there was the joy and gratitude that I had for having this sort of this precious life situation where I get to know the Dharma and I get to practice, right? And there was, and that was beautiful, and that was like this beautiful, that was the sweet part of it, right? And then there was this other component, which was actually there's a tremendous amount of suffering. I, you know, witnessed some suffering in other people. Just like the day before, like quite a lot of it, you know. So it was like this, you know, this heaviness of other people's pain and anguish or samsaric suffering, and at the same time, this beauty, and this joy. And it was interesting how it was all sort of woven together. Like I said, quite bittersweet, and really, I felt this great sort of heart opening happening. It was gorgeous, truly beautiful. And then I had to remind myself, like, you can't chase this. You know, like just do your practice. These things will happen, and that's nice, and it's inspiring, and all that. It's good, but I don't need to make it happen every time.
Yeah, for sure. No, super good reminder. But yeah, it sounds like Tara, her energy was very present, right? Like,
very much so. Yeah, absolutely. There was that. There was actually that sense of this sort of like, ah, there she is.
Yeah, because I really, really am starting to see, you know, over the last few years, you know, mainly through my Dharma practice, but also just aging, you know, getting older, the absolute necessity of diving into and witnessing, you know, my own and others' suffering, and just how pivotal that is for our awakening. And yeah, Tara, I just see, you know, when I look at images of Tara and I really look at her eyes, like that's one thing when I, you know, try and kind of visualize Tara, is I always start with the eyes first, because when I can really sense, you know, that they're there, like that, that I can visualize them. There's just this kind of like dropping into pure acceptance. Like I really feel like she's just representing that acceptance of, no matter, you know, what someone's experiencing, you know, she, that energy is there to be with it, you know, to be with that suffering. And wow, what a powerful experience, you know, to be able to offer that kind of Tara energy to others, and also to ourselves, you know, witnessing our suffering. So
absolutely. It's good
cool
stuff.
Well, that's great to know. I actually didn't know that there that the it's Monday morning Tara practice.
Yeah, it's just by myself. It's not it's not like a whatever. There's nobody else official. There.
Could anyone show up?
I mean anybody can show up. Everyone's welcome to show up. Sometimes people do show up, right? Yeah. I mean, that happens. People come and go and out of the temple. But no, it's just like my own thing. And I like doing it at the temple. If I, you know, I really enjoy I live fairly close to the temple. So it's easy for me to sort of just like drop in there and meditate sometimes. Like, and I find it just so, the space is so conducive to meditation. Either, like, of course, group meditation with other Sangha members is fantastic. But just the space itself, there's something very precious about it. So really? I'm really grateful that I have that opportunity, you know?
Yeah, it's hallowed ground.
It really is.
It feels like, sacred space is really important. Sacred imagery, all the things.
Yep, no doubt about it.
Well, this might be a good time to do some Lojong. What do you think?
Heck yeah, I am ready for it.
Let's do it.
I have pulled up the RLS. Wait, what is it?
The only random Lojong slogan generator, as far as we know, in the universe. In this universe, maybe, I imagine there's many multiverses that have some kind of random Lojong slogan generator.
At least in English, at the time. Oh, in English and on the internet, this is the only one that we've been able to find, is the one at Lions for Dharma Center, put together by the one and only Dirk.
Because I guess, yeah, that's true. You could always randomly just open up like a little booklet and then point. That's a random Lojong slogan generator.
Absolutely. Well, here we go. Push the button, okay? We're going to get a random Lojong slogan. We'll read it and talk about it. Let's see. Did I already push it? There.
Ooh, okay. This one's new. Okay. This is Lojong slogan number 55. Find freedom through investigation and examination. So I'm going to read here. Say Chilbu Choki Gyaltsen. First, investigate which affliction is most dominant in your mind and earnestly apply its specific antidote, striving hard to subdue the affliction. Then analyze the way deluded mental projections arise in relation to the objects that act as their bases. By applying the antidotes, you reduce the force of the afflictions or prevent their arising. By repeatedly thinking, from here on, I will never allow my mind stream to be tainted by these afflictions, you cultivate familiarity with the protective armor for the future. Thus, with these twin methods for applying antidotes to past and future afflictions, strive diligently to eliminate the afflictions. All right, finding freedom through investigation and examination. What do you think, Daniel? What's popping up for you?
Well, the part that resonated, I think, the most with me was the analysis of the way deluded mental projections arise in relation to the objects that act as their basis. This is something that I actually have been focusing on quite a lot lately. I notice, there are these objects that when I come into contact with them, in fact, do appear to very quickly bring about anger or desire, right? And it's really interesting to sort of break it down and look at it. So, for example, I might be like super attracted to a particular form, right? And then I realize, like, well, what is form? You know, like, there's this sort of like, what is it actually that I find so wonderful about whatever this form is, right? And then I might see, like, well, there's a curve here, and there's a suppleness, or there's the shadowing of the light, or there's something. And I recognize that it's just this, it's truly just sensation, right? And that right. I can't find in the form that I find attractive or aversive or whatever, I cannot actually find the thing that in it, you know? Like, it's not just form as a whole, right? It is my projection that I'm attracted to, or that I want to reject, right? Either one of them. It turns out that, like, I created some kind of a weird image, right? I put this thing out there, and then I went chasing it, right? Or running away from it, or whatever. And it's fascinating to watch, because there's nothing there, right? There's nothing there except my deluded mind. Every time, I cannot find anything other than my deluded mind.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's sort of, in a way, it's a little bit disheartening, right?
It is so disheartening. It's really disappointing.
Yeah, like, I want to find a look. Like, oh, there it is.
Yeah, it's like, but it looks so good. Can't I just, like, engage in the delusion? And we do, like, we do all day. Like, right, like, we're, and not that that's, like, a horrible thing. Like, yeah, like, have, relationships with people that you're attracted to, right? You know, like, that's great. But yeah, it's that kind of, like, the unfreedom that happens when we're so attached to it, that it's like, oh, I have to have that. Or my life isn't meaningful because maybe I don't have a relationship, or I don't, like, I'm not with a form that's, like, as attractive as it could be, or right. whatever, like, that is where so much suffering happens, where we think that it should be some kind of way. And we've got, like, all those projections that you're describing.
And we're making up the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, all of it. We just made it up. We could be something else, but we decided to condition ourselves a certain way. Right. And now we have to live with that sort of conditioned behavior. And the good news is, because we conditioned ourselves, we can uncondition ourselves, or we can condition ourselves in another way. So, for example, what I notice is that when I have collapsed, right, when I've lost the sort of vastness of space, if you will, and I've collapsed into this sort of unwise view of something that is beautiful or something that is not beautiful, right? Like, when that's happened, I've narrowed in, right? And I notice all of a sudden now I'm really, like, chasing it, like a dog chasing a stick or something. Like, when I notice that that's happening, then I try to immediately just come back and open, right? Like, come, like, to somehow bring myself back in and open up. And I can't just sort of, like, do that. I can't just say to myself, like, come on back and just be here, right? Sometimes that works, but I have to be more active. It actually requires the application of energy, right? And so then how do I do that? Well, so what I do in my daily life now, when I'm trying to practice this, is Tonglen. So for example, like I noticed at the gym, I think I may have talked, there's this guy there that annoys the crap out of me, right?
Yeah.
And I get sort of like, I've been working in various ways to deal with this, okay? And so whatever, like when I notice that I've sort of like collapsed in, what I do is I'll do a very quick sort of like, I'll do a little bit of Tonglen with him, and then I'll just do it for the entire gym,
Yeah.
right? And I'll just like, I'm on the treadmill and I'm breathing in the suffering of the whole gym, and I'm breathing out this light and all this, you know, hoping and wishing for their well-being and giving away all of my merit and all of that. And that energy actually opens me back up. That when I apply it in that way, I'm no longer, I've literally like changed the course. I went from being super collapsed and tight and really bound up in my own projections and my own delusions, right? And boom, open again, back, right? But it takes this application of energy that's really fascinating to play with. It's a great experiment.
Which is, yeah, what he's saying here is that, you know, really, really having to apply ourselves over and over and over again, really have to strive to do that, because our mind streams are so conditioned, you know, to think of these things in really concrete ways that, like, oh, that guy at the gym is bad and annoying. He deserves to be unliked. You know, that just is like how what our minds are, you know, going to direct ourselves towards. And so I love that you're describing that of like, no, I'm going to pull out of this and really apply the antidote, which, you know, it sounds like your antidote then is Tonglen. That's great. Yeah.
It's super helpful.
And it's an armor, right? It is an armor, because, you know, how that changes your mind affects your entire day. And
you can
right?
be there, Jack. Like literally, like you can be there, and you can, if you're paying attention, you can see the way that the collapse, the concentrated sort of view of our projections, right? The sort of chasing after or avoiding or whatever. You can see the way it feels. It actually feels physically tight. You can you notice that, right? It's not just the mind that's tight. The whole body kind of gets a little bit tight.
Yeah.
And then you physically feel that, oh,
mm-hmm.
that like, I know, coming back, and like it's open again, and it's loose, and it's relaxed again.
Yeah. Which I think is like, I mean, if we want to be healthy in this life, we have to be doing things like that, because I've been doing a lot of research, just kind of like watching YouTube videos is my research on like the effects of kind of chronic stress, you know, that comes from our minds, right? And there's stress is like one of the main killers, right? You
It's
know,
killing us.
Leads
Think
to
about
chronic illnesses and
all those, those chronic autoimmune diseases. A lot of them are caused by high cortisol levels, sustained regular cortisol, really high, right? And then over time, the immune system sort of starts to fall apart, and all kinds of conditions happen as a result of stress.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So how important just to open it up. Form is emptiness.
Right.
Emptiness is form,
That's
right? Oh, who's here?
Oh.
Look at this beautiful Buddha.
Bhagmo Drupa Dorje Gyalpo.
All right. I like him.
I like him too. That's
What a
my
babe.
kind of Buddha.
Yeah, he looks happy. And I like that kind of that bronze with the turquoise in there. Yeah, you got to check out this page, because Dirk has put so much good art on each of the Lojong slogans. And so definitely, definitely go here.
Good stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. Oh, I'm feeling good already, Daniel. How are you
Me
feeling?
too. This is good stuff. Okay. What's your story?
We're going to jump right in. People pleasing.
Yeah, people pleasing.
Okay. So, like I said, I have a tendency to overbook, and right now I'm working almost full time. I'm a grad student. I'm trying to maintain a relationship. I have a cat. I don't have children, so I know some of y'all have a lot more on your plate, which I admire. But I also I'm saying that because sometimes I have to reflect and think like I could be doing this with like a kid also. So like chill the fuck out. But yeah, also like trying to do temple stuff and have friends and all the things. And I just do not like keep track of everything that I'm doing. One of my strategies is that I have a really like really well kind of, written out agenda. But sometimes what happens is I don't always remember to write it down. And if I don't write something down, it's gonna leave my mind until someone reminds me that it's happening. And so what happened this last week is I had some plans to see some friends on Saturday, and we were gonna meet up around 2, I think it was. And I had gotten an email reminder from Ellen the day before that this kind of small study group that has been meeting over the last few years was going to be getting together over Zoom to practice some of the meditations that we've been reading about but haven't got to practice with one another. So I was like, oh shit, that's right. Okay, I really wanted to do that, but it's from 1 to 3 p.m. Okay, it's right in the middle of my, my plans with my friends. And so something I've been doing recently with is to kind of combat this feeling of like guilt about sharing what my needs are. And so I just it, which is very hard for me. I just, sent a text. Hey, I'm sorry. I forgot that I had this meditation thing. I really want to go to it. Can we push our time back? And tried not to overly apologize, right? Because I think that's like kind of annoying. But it was so interesting. It was like the moment I sent it, after having some kind of self-talk of being like, no, you're doing the right thing. Like you're sharing your needs, you're open to negotiation, right, with people on this. I immediately felt like this pressure to take it back.
Oh.
And be like, oh wait, never mind, never mind. I know we made plans, so like let's just like stick with the plan, right? I didn't send that, right? Because I knew that I was watching my mind. I was like, huh, this is interesting. I'm starting to feel kind of panicky. What is going on here? And so I just was kind of watching it for like the whole day. And on text message, like there's all different kinds of ways that you can interpret and usually misinterpret
Oh,
what's
yeah.
going on, right? Especially between a whole group of like 5 people. And so I was reading into like the fact that like no one was hearting or liking like my messages, even though I was trying to send things that were kind of lighthearted or funny. So there were all these ways that I could see myself trying to
Yeah.
like lightly manipulate, right, the situation so that people could like me again.
Yeah.
Because
You put
I have this,
emojis, you put emojis on there.
right? Yes, I put emojis, and the whole thing that was coming up was that I for some reason felt that people were mad at me and no longer were happy with me and the plans that we had made. So Saturday, the meditation comes. I do the meditation. I leave early because I'm feeling stressed about my friends, right? But I do end up doing the whole meditation. I just left before the discussion started. And then I go and see my friends. No one says shit about how the plans changed. Everyone's just happy to be with each other. One of my friends at the end of the day even says, Jack, you're such a good friend. I love you, And so it
Oh.
was just like, oh my God, my brain. Like what is happening in my brain? Where I'm like just so fearful that like that I'm going to make people unhappy by just sharing my needs. So fascinating, a little slightly disturbing, but I think in a good way.
Well, I'm so glad that you shared this, Jack, because before, so I was a little curious why you wanted to talk about people pleasing. And it didn't really like resonate with me. I was like, whatever. And then I thought, you know what? I'm actually going to see. I took an online quiz to see if I'm a people pleaser.
Oh.
And I just, because I was like, I don't really feel like, I don't know that I'm a people pleaser, right? And
Yes.
then I was like, and sure enough, like the results are like, nah, you're not really, you're good, like, or
Yeah.
whatever. Like, it's not really a thing for you. But as you were talking, it dawned on me that I'm actually so such a people pleaser that it prevents me from doing certain things. So you're talking about overcommitting, right? And that bad feeling you got at having to tell the group that you had needs, that like, oopsie daisy, I
Yeah.
just, right? And it was such a bad feeling for you to like disappoint them and all of that. And it turned out not to be a big deal, but still, that feeling is actually, so one of the biggest problems I have in relationships is that I re don't want to commit. And I didn't mean that, I don't mean like marriage. What I
Yeah.
mean is like, somebody will say, do you want to go to a concert next month on a Thursday, whatever. And even though I want to, the genuine response is like, hell yeah, of course, I would love that. I will hesitate and I'll say, well, that sounds really nice, but let me check and get back to you. And because I really want to, and but I don't, I so badly do not want to disappoint, right? And
Yeah.
it doesn't matter whether we're talking about my partners or my business partners, my life partners, or my kids or whatever. Like, I often, one of the biggest complaints that I have is that it's terribly difficult to pin me down to do something,
Yeah.
right? And it's, and it's not because I don't love these people. It's not because I don't want to spend time with them. None of that. But the actual scheduling of it, right? And being held sort of accountable to doing what I said I was going to do is such a rub for me. I'm not like, and I don't mind the challenge of it. That's okay. I just really badly don't want to disappoint anybody. You know?
Yeah.
So in a weird freaking way, my people-pleasing behavior is actually disconnecting me from the people I wish to please.
Oh my gosh, right?
Thank you, Jack. Thank
Oh,
you.
it's so
That's good stuff.
fascinating. Yeah, our mind just like twists us up in these knots where it's like, again, as we were talking about in the Lojong slogan, where none of this actually exists in any like, tight, tangible form. And like all of it, we're just creating this narrative around this that people are going to be disappointed. I already am a disappointment, so I shouldn't make plans because I'm going to disappoint. Like all these, like we've got all
That's right.
just
We
neuroses.
have definitely created a solid self and a solid other. We know it
Oh, yeah.
so well. We
Oh,
know it
yeah.
so well.
Yep, and that's another thing that reminds me is that so often when I'm doing the people pleasing thing is that I think I know what the other
That's
person
right.
thinks or wants from me, and so then I'm trying to like kind of figure out how I can fit into that and like fit my plans and my needs into what I think the other person needs or
You're
wants.
shadow boxing.
Yeah, totally. It's exhausting and
Right.
it doesn't work.
No. No.
Because turns out my idea of that person's solid self is not their idea of their solid self, and turns out their idea is not a self either. So,
Right. Exactly. Exactly that.
and I think, and it's important to say, like, I of course, I take responsibility, right, for like, screwing up the plan again. Like, like there's ways that I need to do better about my impermanent, not solid self's responsibilities. But to know that, like, yeah, it's okay. Like, it's okay to say that I need to change plans. Yeah, it doesn't mean I'm a fuck up. That's
Or
not a
maybe you're a fuck up, and that's okay too.
yeah. And that's okay too. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yes.
I have a question, Jai.
Yes.
Okay. So here's the thing, though, right? We're aspiring bodhisattvas, right? And that means that, we're really aspiring to this like selfless service and compassion and love for all sentient beings. It's not even like people pleasing. It almost feels or sounds like other beings. pleasing or something, right? So here's the question. Are bodhisattvas people pleasers?
I love this question. I think it's a great question. And I think that people pleasing and niceness is like the near enemy, if you could use that term,
Ooh.
Of like bodhisattva activity and genuine kindness, right? Because like we can do all kinds of niceties for people all day where we're just making them feel good in a conventional way and letting them have their way, right? What they think they want. And that's not actual kindness. And actually might be, you know, perpetuating their afflictive behavior sometimes, depending on what the nicety is.
Right.
But a kindness of a bodhisattva or a kindness of a lama, you know, I think about our teacher, Lama Yeshe Jinpa. Like, lama isn't nice to me.
No.
He's not, like, he's actually, like, very grandmotherly.
He's very sweet.
Very sweet. But he's not going to he's not going to pat my head and tell me that everything I'm doing is, like, wonderful and great. But what he is going to tell me is that, like, you know, here's where you need to be tweaking things and focusing your mind. He's, you know, directing. And that's something that can sometimes feel really hard, right?
Yeah.
And so if he was just being nice, it would be like, yay, I feel good all the time. But his kindness is that he's pointing out, like, where I need to put some real effort, which is hard. And it's not something I always want to do. So very, very different niceness and kindness. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's quite different. I think the other thing that happens is that, or the other aspect of it is that bodhisattvas are in fact concerned, they're motivated by compassion and wisdom for all beings. And I think that's one of the, like, for people who really, like, suffer, and there really is actual some serious suffering that comes with being overly people pleasing, right? And I my sense is that a bodhisattva is interested in all sentient beings, including themselves.
Yeah.
Right? They include themselves in their desire. Their compassion is not only for what's out there, for other beings, right? That's one of the things that people oftentimes get confused about. We are included in that.
Yes.
Right? And so we have to, in many cases, we actually have to start right here, right? And being a people pleaser is not compassionate towards ourselves. It is not loving ourselves. In fact, it is the exact opposite, because it's taking us away from being authentic and genuine and present and being really what and who we are, right? Because instead we're doing that little game that you just said, right? Which is we're projecting out there, and then we're acting as if it's all real, as if our beliefs about who we are and who they are all real. And it creates this incredible distortion, right? And then the weird part is we get like attached to those distortions.
Yeah.
And then when other people behave differently because they're not even aware of what's going on, we're surprised, right? We're like, oh my gosh, right? It turns out that in many cases, like, if people really do actually, like, even people who don't know us, even strangers, will oftentimes want for our well-being. They will actually care about us, right? But they don't know, right? They don't know. And if we can't share, like you were saying, like when you did in your text message thread there, if we can't share our own needs, our own perspective, right? And say, like, hey, like, actually, like, it's not going to work out, right? Because of some other reason. If we can't do that, that's not loving ourselves. It's not being very compassionate
with ourselves. Right. And it leads to me. Sorry, go ahead. I didn't hear that last part.
I just said a bodhisattva would not engage in that type of behavior.
Right. Yeah. Because also what that does when we're not, you know, when we're not able to state our needs and we're just trying to kind of position ourselves to be liked or, you know, do whatever the other person wants, it just spurs resentment. And that is not a mindset that, you know, helps us train in compassion and love and joy and equanimity, right? And I watched this pretty great video, an interview with Gabor Maté. Have you heard of him? He's a psychiatrist and works a lot on chronic illness and kind of like the basis for chronic illness. And he talks a lot about people pleasing, actually, and that so many of the people he's met who have cancer or another kind of life-threatening illness, is when he gets into kind of working with them on a psychological level, he notices that there's this pattern of people who can't say no, of people who just can't put up their authentic selves because they're fearing some kind of rejection. And he shared this great quote from a different therapist that I thought was really fascinating. And he said that, whenever we kind of come up against this issue of people pleasing, we should choose feeling guilty over feeling resentful every time. I thought that was so fabulous because I didn't even realize that that was like a choice, because you feel like saying no to people, like at least for me where I'm at right now, I automatically feel a little bit of guilt. Like there's just that feeling that comes up of like, oh no, like are they going to be disappointed? Like, what's going to happen? And ultimately we have to let that go, because that resentment that pops up is just a very toxic mindset to be in. So I thought that was really fascinating with that connection to chronic illness.
That is. It's fascinating, the relationship between the mind and the body in that sense, right? Wanting a balanced mind is wanting a balanced body in many, many ways. So I mean, like, so it's not just like resentment that this kind of people serving or people pleasing behavior can lead to. I think there's also this. And maybe the resentment comes from this, but there's this, I think, a deep sense of dissatisfaction because you can't get what you want because the thing that you're trying to do is an impossible task. Why? Because people are transient, they are changing. If you notice yourself, you notice that from morning to night, you're constantly a different person. You're always a different person, right? Sometimes something that would make you laugh would make you cry, other times it would make you yell, it would make you scream, right? Like, just in our own direct experience, that's us, and other people are the same way, right? Constantly, very fleeting, very changing. And so, like, trying to please somebody where we project something solid onto a moving object and then act as if it's real, and then we go doing something over here when now it's moved over there, it never even was in the place that we thought it was, right? How incredibly, like, we're never going to get what we want because we can't please those people. Right, other than very temporarily and only superficially.
So that so what's really interesting about that like constant dissatisfaction of samsaric pleasure, right, is that we're just constantly, like you said, just going after something that's already changing before our eyes. How interesting that, the path of a Buddha, of a Bodhisattva, is, I think, this deep satisfaction, because we're coming into this awareness of reality as it is, that, we can't pin anything down. And so, yeah, how cool, right? That there can be freedom from, this kind of wish to make things solid. And yeah, I think that's really beautiful. Because I do, you see images of a Buddha, right? And it feels like there's this deep sense of satisfaction, right? And just kind of
Absolutely. And
groundedness.
if you take the image of a Buddha, anyone that you might have, or a Bodhisattva, and you compare it to any image that you've seen of a hungry ghost, right? Like, which one looks more satisfied, right? The hungry ghost is perpetually dissatisfied because it doesn't, you can't give it what it wants. It can't be fed. It can't have its thirst quenched. It can't feel full, right? It's never ending, right? Like, it's like a little treadmill. You just can't can't get off. It just keeps going again and again and again and again, right? And constantly needing that validation from some kind of an external source, that's, it's never going to work out for you, man.
Right.
Right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And
I just wanted to say, like, there were, you mentioned Matthew earlier. We were talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said something a while ago. He gave this talk that I don't know that I'll ever forget, that was all about generosity. I think I've, you know, we've talked about it a little bit here and
Yeah.
there. There was this thing he said that I, that just read, just like continues to, you know, bounce around in my mind. He said that saying no and setting boundaries is a gift that we give others and ourselves. And the good news is that sometimes we get to give it many times, right? So if we truly do want to give, we want to have that sort of bodhisattva spirit, then we want to be generous, right? And that means being generous enough to be willing enough to bear ourselves a little bit, to at least say something about our needs, to say something about our boundaries. And when we're, when we can't do the thing, whatever it is, to say no, right?
Yeah.
And I, that it, it's, it sounds so basic. It sounds so like childish and elementary, right? It's the kind of thing that like a little kid would be like, yeah, of course, right? But we have to remind ourselves of this because it's easy to fall into these kinds of traps.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I mean that really resonates with me for what happened this weekend is that at one point when I was going through all my like kind of chaotic
Yeah.
anxieties, I just kind of reminded myself like, you know, hey, you've made this decision and what might be like the long-term benefits to my friends by sharing with them that this thing is really important to me. That, you know, I need to change plans because I really need to train my mind. You know, like, could that be a gift in itself and saying like, wow, that's interesting. That's important
Yeah.
enough that my friend wants to change their plans.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think oftentimes as we're on a path, you know, there's ways that like I can feel myself tugged, you know, to like do something else, like, oh, maybe I should watch TV with my roomies or whatever. And like put off meditating or whatnot. You know, there's all these different ways that we can be pulled.
Yeah.
Can we give the gift of saying, no, thank you. You know, I'm going to do my training. You know, what better, like, honestly, what better gift could we be giving our friends?
Yeah, you know, both in terms of the examples that are offered by boundary setting, right? And also, so just that alone is a good example. And then, of course, if it wasn't, if the boundaries were being set in favor of your training, my goodness, even better, right? Because then it might pique curiosity and
Yeah.
let them, you know, kind of discover things on their own.
For sure. Yeah. Ooh. Okay. So I think this week I'm gonna like I really want to put some effort, you know, towards recognizing this in my mind. Like, where am I doing people pleasing on just kind of a day-to-day basis, and just kind of ask, you know, well, why? Like,
Yeah.
why do that? And is there what's the motivation, right? Like,
Yeah.
what's the motivation behind doing this? Is it a bodhicitta motivation, or is it a Jack kind of like tightly bound thinking
Right.
I'm Jack mindset, you know, motivation?
I like it. I like it. I'm going to be on the lookout for avoidance, you know, where actually I'm avoiding things because I don't want to displease people, which is just, you know, same thing, just from a slightly different angle.
Yeah, totally. Oh, Daniel, thank you so much for your friendship. I really appreciate and admire
Oh,
you.
it goes both. It's just a mirror saying I feel
Yeah.
excellent.
And to all listening, we appreciate you so much. If
Oh,
you have the time and the you know the ability, drop Lion's Roar $5, you know, $3, whatever it is that you might be able to offer. We would really appreciate
one
it.
bit, one Bitcoin.
One Bitcoin. All right, everybody. We'll be back next week. Take care.
Thank you, Jack. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, Daniel.